Dad has always sent me these handwritten notes, and they've been wonderfully encouraging, particularly as a younger man and now someone in the same job as him in full-time ministry. As people, we love encouragement. We love a pat on the back, a word to say, thank you for your hard work. Some piece of acknowledgement, you know, you're doing the right thing. Now, we're not necessarily in it for the praise, but it is always encouraging. This week we are beginning a new series looking at the book to the Philippians, Paul's letter, and he's writing to a church that he planted. And this letter is full of joy and encouragement. His love spills out of the pages for these people. It's not cliche either. It's not like it's signed, "Love Paul," at the end of the letter. It's just all through it. And it just shows from start to finish how much Paul appreciates these Philippians because they have partnered with him in the gospel. Today, like a handwritten letter, I want to encourage you as partners in the gospel of Jesus so that you know the same God who has done so much in your life, to know that this God is not finished with you. As we come to the end of 1 year and stare down the barrel of 2016, know that next year and beyond, the God who created and sustains the world will continue to love you, work through you to see himself glorified. So please, if you don't have a Bible open, grab a Bible, open it up to Philippians 3. Sorry, Philippians 1. We didn't just skip a couple of chapters. After Paul greets the Philippians through the grace and peace of God, he thanks God for the Philippians. Have a look at verse 3 with me. "I thank my God every time I remember you, in all of my prayers for all of you. I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now." It's pretty clear how meaningful Paul's partnership with these Philippians has been to him. Every time he prays to God, he's thanking God for them. And when he's praying joyfully. This right here is a wonderful challenge and a rebuke as well. How many of you here could say that you are always praying for your family, let alone for your church family? And that when you do pray, it's always with joy. I'm feeling pretty tired after this Christmas season. It's been good, but you know, at the moment it's hard to do anything with joy. And yet this is Paul, who had been beaten, abused, all for the sake of the gospel. He was possibly sitting in chains as he's writing this letter, and yet he can say, "I pray with joy." How can he do this? Because he has his view centered on the gospel. Paul's focus on their partnership together is their relationship around the gospel. It's not that, "I remember last time I was with you, we had a wonderful feast. You know, there was the whole church together, all of you Philippians, and we ate turkey on Christmas Day. And it was a wonderful partnership we had over that meal." He doesn't say, "I remember that time that we stayed up till 2 a.m. playing cards. That was so much fun. That was great." He says, "Our partnership in the gospel. I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel." The heart of their close connection is their passion for the gospel. How they partnered with Paul. They didn't just leave the work of the gospel up to Paul as the apostle, you know, the only one commissioned by God. They rolled up their sleeves and they got their arms dirty in the work of the gospel. What unites us here at this service? What are the things you talk about before or after church? The weather? Sport? Aches and pains? Children? Grandchildren? Great-grandchildren. All of these things are good things to talk about because we're in each other's lives. But they're not the thing that unites us. The thing that brings us together from being a ragtag bunch of people who just so happen to come to church at the same time is our partnership in the gospel. We all have a passion to be more like Jesus, to see the gospel proclaimed in our lives and each other's. What unites us is being God-centered. But what about across the church? Not just this congregation, but across the whole church. Is there anything that unites us? When there's a combined service, do you come out in the morning for the combined service? Do you come to be part of the partnership in the gospel of St. Aidan's? Or can it be too hard if church isn't at the right time for you? Or if there are too many screaming kids, the music's not loud enough, the music's too quiet? Maybe it just all gives you a headache and it's too hard, so you'll only come if church is at 6 p.m. This church isn't monocultural. It's not just retirees with grandchildren. It's not just workers with kids. It's not just young adults, and it's not just teenagers and parents. The people that attend our services might be similar in age or demographic, but that is not our church. God's church here at St. Aidan's is made up of many different people. Don't miss out on celebrating and encouraging others in our church. In our conversations at church, we should be sharing in the gospel. Now, this doesn't mean you stand there and say, "Steph, believe that Jesus died for you," and then walk away. Yeah, and say, "Penny, believe, you know, Jesus died for you too. He loves you." You know, you can say that after church if you like. Maybe it's a good place to start. You know, you can share what God has been teaching you, rebuking you about. Brother, let me encourage you. This is what God has taught me this week, and it was wonderfully challenging, and it's helped me. Pray for one another. How many of you, when someone shares something difficult, say, "Do you know what, brother, I will pray for you," and then go away and forget to do it? That was my practice for a long time. And so what I do now is if someone says, "Oh, look, this is going on," I'll say, "I'll pray for you," and then I stop right there and I pray for them because I forget. And so I'll stop and pray whether I'm, you know, if it's straight up the church, if we're in a cafe, middle of a shopping center, wherever it is, because I know that if I don't pray for them then and there, I will just forget. In short, we need to be like the Philippians, gospel-focused, putting the gospel at the heart of our relationships, because that is what unites us. Paul's second piece of encouragement comes from the fact that God is still at work. Have a look at verse 6. "Being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus." Paul is thankful to God because he can be entirely confident that the God who converted them through Paul's ministry is the God who will carry them on till the day that the Lord returns. God continues to work. Salvation from darkness to light is just the start of God's work. If God were a chef, he wouldn't be one of those chefs who uses a slow cooker. Does anybody use a slow cooker here? Yes? I think they're wonderful. Because you can do all that work in the morning, get it all ready, and you come home and your house smells wonderful, your food's ready, you don't have to do any more work, there's only one pot to clean up, and I really appreciate that as the one who often does the cleaning. But God's not the kind who will just get things ready and walk away. He is a hands-on God. He's over the top of the stove, sweat on his brow, as he adds flavor, taste. What does this meal need? Does it need salt? Do I add more of this or that? God is the one who began a work in the Philippians, and he is the one who continues it on. Brothers and sisters, God is not done with you. As this year draws to a close, the Lord has not finished his work. He is the one who will carry it on, as he has this year, as he will next year, until we meet our Maker or the Lord returns. This really is extraordinary. The God of the universe, who has amazing power, who makes the earth rotate around the sun, who does amazing things, who can create the universe with a single word, this God cares for you. This God values you. He hasn't just started you off and walked away. He is that image from Isaiah, the potter and the clay. He molds us. He shapes us, carving out our faults, smoothing out the imperfections as he makes us like his son. We have the attention and love of the most important being in the universe. Have any of you seen those videos of when the Beatles first came to Australia? Any of you seen them? With like the screaming crowds, girls kind of wooing at the, you know, the sight. There was actually someone here at our earlier congregation who was there. She didn't. Oh, were you there? Oh, wonderful! Did you like faint in excitement? Ian, did you? No. Okay. Maybe. Rolling Stones, okay. All right. You know, when the Beatles came down off the plane and they looked at a girl for too long, she just collapsed. Let alone go over and shake a hand or kiss on the cheek. Ah! And they would just fall to the floor. We have the love and attention of one who is so much more impressive than a band. The God who made you and saved you, he is still working. This is the same for us here today. Paul closes this section by revealing what he prays for them. He's been telling them, I pray with joy for you. And now he finally tells us what he prays for them. Have a look in verse 9. And this is my prayer, that your love may abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight, so that you may be able to discern what is best and may be pure and blameless until the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ, to the glory and praise of God. This is a wonderful prayer. Firstly, Paul prays that their love may abound more and more. Now, this isn't a love for God. It's not a love for people. It seems to be deliberately ambiguous. But of course, if I'm loving God, I'll be loving people more. Paul wants them to keep abounding and growing in love. And this is not just some kind of sentimental, oh, I've got a warm feeling in my heart, I'll give you a hug kind of love. It's specific. He wants their love to abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight. This is a love that becomes more knowledgeable. Paul wants them to know God, to understand him, his ways, his words, to know them and to live them, to understand who God is. But how does knowledge lead to love? When I first met my wonderful wife, Alyssa, there was an immediate attraction. We were on a week-long Christian camp. So, of course, this is where all good romance starts, on Christian camps. But I couldn't have just gotten married to Alyssa straight away. I didn't know who she was. Alyssa and I were 16, and by the end of the week, we'd been dating for 4 days. The camp was down in Cooma, a good couple of hours from Alyssa's home in Helensburg. So when she rang home to tell her father that she was going to get a lift home with her new boyfriend, her new handsome young boyfriend, which meant Dad only had to drive to Shell Harbour instead of Cooma, well, he was pretty excited. But he also had some questions about her new young beau, to which Alyssa quickly answered, "Don't worry, he's a minister's son." I don't think that set his mind at ease. The next question was a lot harder. What's his name? Alyssa said, "James." And then she paused, looked at my name tag, "Barnett." You see, this knowledge was helping us to fall in love so quickly. I had to get to know her, to know who she was, to know what she was like, to know whether she followed the Lord. This didn't happen overnight. It took a period. The more I know her, the more I love her. It's the same today. The more I get to know her, the more I love her. I'm sure it's the same for you and your relationships. As we get to know our God better, as we grow in understanding of how much God has done, the depth of our depravity and sin, and how much He truly loves us and has planned from the beginning of creation to take care of us for eternity, we will know Him and love Him more. And this is true of all of life. I remember when I first became a father. It totally changed my whole view of God. It gave me a new depth of insight. Until that point, I'd only related to God as a child, and that's good and right. But when I became a father, especially of a son we named Isaac, it just gave a whole new understanding to the story of the Bible, let alone Abraham and Isaac's story. It gave me a new insight into how much God loves as a father. He sent His Son who was born to die. I could never send my son to die. How amazingly generous and sacrificial is God's love for me and for you. This knowledge of God has a point here, so that we can discern, so that we can know what is pure and blameless. Paul doesn't want these Christians to get complacent. He's not satisfied with their lives in status quo. He wants them to move on, to become more discerning, to have a greater understanding of what the Christian life is to look like. And ultimately, Paul yearns for these Philippians to be perfect. And he trusts in God that that will happen on the day of the Lord. Brothers and sisters, this is my prayer for you as well. I want you to grow in knowledge and depth of insight about God and His love for you, so you can abound in love for God and for others, to have God's wisdom and discernment in all things. Now, I'm not sure what kind of year you've had in 2015 this year, but when you stop and think about it, will you think about it fondly or with grief? Maybe it's been tinged with sadness, lost friends, broken relationships. Maybe you've said farewell to far too many people this year. Maybe it's been a year of joy, new additions to the family, a great holiday, a successful work this year. If you're anything like me, it's probably a combination of these, of grief and sadness. I've had the joy to move here. I've nearly hit my one-year anniversary. I've been encouraged by you. Hopefully, I've also encouraged you. But when we moved here, that also meant that we moved away from friends and family. It's been a joyful year seeing my children grow, and it's been an amazing year seeing many youth in this church grow to love the Lord more and more, and also see some of them love the Lord for the very first time. But let me encourage you with Paul's words to the Philippians. We are partners together in this church. So let's partner around the gospel, not mere trivialities. God has not finished what He began in you. He is not done yet. So in this final sermon of 2015, let me encourage you to seek to know more of God, to know Him deeper, to read His word, to talk more to Him, to understand Him in a new way as your life changes. Let your love abound more and more for God and for people.